Blog Talk Radio.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold.
You're listening to Step Into the Light with Patty Sheen.
Who brings a fire, ignites a candle, and makes his own.
This is the show where Christians share their walk from darkness down a sometimes long and lonely path to the light of healing and fulfillment through faith.
Seek out the hopeless, confused and torn, and hold out your candle for all to see. Take your candle and go light your world.
Right here on Blog Talk Radio. Addiction, abuse, divorce, debt, guilt, fear, heartbreak, illness, loneliness, loss of a loved one, rejection. All of these circumstances cast shadows across the paths of our lives. On this show, you will hear stories and testimonies of people just like us who have followed God's guidance out of the gloom of those dark places. Welcome to Step Into the Light. I'm your host, Patty Sheen. Thanks for joining me for this seventh episode right here on Blog Talk Radio on the 27th day of October, 2015. In case we have any listeners who come onto the show and are not able to stay, I would like to let you know where you can find it again and where you can find me. You can find me at www.pattysheen, that's spelled PattySheene.com. Over there you will find a Blog Talk Radio page on my website, and it will give you all the information you need about this current show, also about any archive shows that you may like to listen to. I used to do a show before this one back in January through June. The archive shows are also listed for that. The name of it was Literally Speaking. So when you have some time, go on over and listen to those podcasts. I think you'll enjoy them. I can also be found on Facebook at Step Into the Light. And I also have a personal page, which is Patty Sheen Gonzalez. Also, I can be found on Twitter, and my Twitter handle is at Patty Sheen. Well, I'd like to offer a prayer this morning for all the victims of the terrible flooding down in Texas and other states south of us here. I'm in Colorado, but I know that those people have had a terrible time, and I'd like to encourage everyone to offer up prayers for all of those who have been affected by that devastation. On a lighter note, for those of you who are sports fans, the World Series begins tonight, I believe. It's going to be the New York Mets against the Kansas City Royals. I'm a former New Yorker, so I suppose I should be rooting for the Mets, although I more identify with my Colorado Rockies out here, which were out of it a long time ago. So I'm really not sure who I'm going to root for, but I hope that the players and the fans and everyone involved in the series have a wonderful time. I'm kind of disappointed that the Cubs didn't make it. I have some dear friends who are huge Cubs fans, and I kind of would like to have seen them make it only because they've been the underdog for a while. But, oh well, that's the way it goes. Halloween is coming up on Saturday night, and I know some folks see that as a very dark holiday, and others just see it for the fun that can be had. Whichever your opinion is of Halloween, the most important thing is to be safe, educate your kids to be safe, make sure that they go out trick-or-treating in groups, make sure that they have clothing on that is able to be seen by passing cars. Make sure that they're careful about who they get candy and goodies from. Also, if you're an older person and you don't particularly care to do the whole Halloween thing, just be sure that you have your, I think the it still stands that if you have your lights off that the trick-or-treaters know, your porch lights, the trick-or-treaters know not to stop by your home. But if you do expect trick-or-treaters, try and have your area lighted enough to where they can kind of see where they're going also, because you know how the little ones are, especially in those costumes that are long and gather around their feet, and it's easy for them to trip and so such. So just make sure everybody stays as safe as you possibly can. Do what you can to see that that happens. If you have any photos of harvest parties or any such thing like that that you hold in your town, I'd love to have you send them to me. I'll put them on the Step Into the Light Facebook page. Our church had a harvest party here Sunday night and hayride. Unfortunately, my husband and I were unable to attend because we had to go to an out-of-town doctor's appointment early Monday morning. But anyway, if you have any pictures you'd like to share, I'd love to go ahead and post them. All righty, today we have a very special guest. Susan Begans is an acquisition editor for Prism Book Group with a goal of bringing great romance novels and novellas to publication. She also crafts her own Christian historical and contemporary novels. Pesto and Potholes, the first novel in her contemporary Orchard Hill series, was published in March of 2015. Book 2, Salsa and Speed Bumps, will follow in December of this year, and a third book is scheduled for publication in 2016. Susan possesses a background in the mental health field, holds a seminary degree in counseling psychology, and serves in various behind-the-scenes capacities in her church. These experiences continue to fuel her speaking ministry, which she also uses to encourage and teach others to follow God in developing their full potential according to God's plan. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm glad you're here. We had a little bit of technical difficulty this morning, folks. I was unable to get Susan on the phone, and I was getting a little nervous as the countdown came for the show. But praise the Lord, she suddenly appeared on my board, so that worked out well. So it's really good to have you here, Susan.
Yes, it's very good to be here, definitely.
Well, Susan, let's start by you telling us what motivated you to begin. Can't talk this morning either. What motivated you to begin your writing career?
I've told this story so many times, like even at conferences, but I started in 2009, in October, right about this time of year. I woke up one morning having had a dream that I was supposed to do National Novel Writing Month, which seemed like the most bizarre thing that God could tell me to do. I don't know how many people know about NaNoWriMo, that's what it's called, but people around the world, I think this year they're expecting 300,000 people around the world to sign up to write a 50,000-word novel in 30 days. And I had known people who had done it, but I'd never done it myself. And I thought, and I'm like, well, okay, God, that's kind of weird, but it's not illegal, it doesn't cost me anything, and if I don't win, it's no big deal. So I'd always wanted to write a story. I'd had a story in my head, and I'd always been afraid or intimidated at the process of doing it. And so I just thought, fine, you know, November 1st, I'm going to start writing that story. And I did, and by the 21st of November, I had written 104,000 words and had finished the story. So,
wow.
And I had so much fun. It was so much fun. And I haven't stopped writing since. So I've won NaNoWriMo 6 years in a row. In 5 days, I'm going to start for number 7. So, and I'm really eager for it. I'm looking forward to the opportunity. And it's a great way for me to connect with other writers online, but also in my local community, because we'll do write-ins and we'll get together face-to-face with our computers and write. So it's a wonderful opportunity for that kind of connection.
Well, Susan, being a person who has attempted NaNoWriMo myself a few times and has not won it, I want to congratulate you. I think that is absolutely wonderful. And it's tough. I can't remember, isn't it? I've done the math breakdown. Isn't it 1,667 words a day you have to write to make that 50,000 in 30 days? Something like that.
Yeah.
Because
yes,
I have this thing about, I love Excel files. And I used to make up this Excel file, you know, and I would make this big thing of how many words I was supposed to be at by the end of every day. And all the, you know, I spent more time getting ready for it than I did doing the actual writing, which is probably why I never won it. But
they have a nice little chart now that they keep on there. So you can just upload your numbers every day, and it'll show you where you're at and if you're ahead of the game or not. So it's kind of nice.
Well, I think
they do it all for you.
That. I think I discovered that after I went through all that nonsense myself. It's like, oh, it's already on here for you. But I agree with you. It is a wonderful way to network with other writers. Of course, part of my problem is I'm in a remote area. I'm way down here in southeastern Colorado. So I can't, like, go to the local library and a bunch of us are going to get together and write. And I think that would be more of an incentive, although I'm probably just making excuses here. But anyway, I have made some very close friends on NaNoWriMo. There were about 10 of us that kind of formed this little group, and we still keep in touch every now and again. It's really a fun thing. Well, Susan, that pretty much tells you then that you felt that was God's calling for your life, the fact that you had that dream and you followed through, and like you say, this is going to be the seventh year for you that you have successfully completed this. So that's a pretty good indication that you're doing what God told you to do.
I didn't know though that was going to be my calling. I just wrote a book and I had fun doing it. I was trying, as my kids went back to school went to school, because I was a stay-at-home mom, tried to find a job in my field, but I really couldn't. And so I ended up just figuring, well, God kept giving me all these stories because I've written so many. I mean, I've written 6 through NaNoWriMo. I've written 7 without it. So I just keep getting all these stories, and I write, and I can write very fast without NaNoWriMo. So I just haven't stopped. So it just feels like God's just opened doors. And when I used to serve in women's ministry at my church, and I finally stepped down and I said, you know, I just feel like God's calling me to do the writing. And you know, God provided somebody to take my place, and I stepped out in faith, and it was like all of a sudden doors started opening for my writing and for going to conferences, and it started to move very quickly. So I think it was just that step of obedience to say, this is what God's calling me to do. I don't know what it's going to be like. I didn't know I'd be editing. I didn't know I'd be going to conferences and speaking. I didn't know that I'd have books coming out. I didn't know any of that was going to happen. It was just total step of faith. And so I think, and it's been great too, my pastors have been so affirming of my journey as well. So it's not something I've done, you know, on a whim by any means. But I think it does go to prove that, you know, if you step out in faith and you just obey God and leave the rest to Him, He does work in His time. It's not always in our time, and that can be frustrating. But
yes,
but yeah, He does work, and He's always faithful. So I could be a testimony to that.
So I take it you must have been doing some writing before you ever started NaNoWriMo. Did you write short stories and poetry and that kind of thing when you were a young person, or younger than you are now, I should say?
Yeah, definitely younger than I am now. As a kid, I used to keep journals, and I used to write poetry, and I wrote short stories, you know, like in high school and stuff, and I used to do forensics, where I'd write speeches. In my undergrad, when I was looking at going to graduate school, one of my professors sat down, and I had a choice of going into counseling psychology versus clinical, and he said, you know, Susan, your writing skills are so good. That's going to be what's going to get you through graduate school. So go into counseling psych, because your research skills aren't quite as solid, you know, and they aren't. I don't like statistics. I don't like all that stuff. So it was a good call on his part to point that out, that my writing skills were so good that was what was going to push me through. And it was. It was what got me through graduate school, because I'm not the smartest, you know, knife in the drawer. And but I was able to make it through. I was able to get my degree. And it was also what helped me in my career field as well, because I ended up not only being a case manager where I had to write treatment plans and progress notes, but I ended up becoming an admissions and discharge coordinator, where I actually would have to condense a person's entire history, medically and psychologically, into a format that was acceptable to the state of Wisconsin, was acceptable to people so they could read it, assimilate it, and provide an adequate treatment for the patients. And it was fascinating, and I loved it. But again, it was all writing. It was sitting in my office, just writing and writing and writing. But that wasn't fiction.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it wasn't until I did NaNoWriMo that I really stepped out and tried to do, obviously, far more than a full-length novel.
Yeah. Well, I know where you're coming from. I worked in psychiatry and nursing for 30-some years, Susan. And, of course, we had to do the progress notes and all that. And I used to think, oh, this is so boring, especially the weekly progress notes on people who didn't change that much. And my supervisor used to come along and say, do some creative writing. This is not a good subject to do creative writing with.
Yeah.
Susan, you love to write romance. but your books dig much deeper than candy and flowers and moonlight kisses. So tell us what takeaway your readers can expect from your books. What is unique about your writing style, especially within this romantic genre?
Maybe because I found that life is hard and a struggle for many people, including myself, I just can't write the fluffy, sweet romances. I wish I could. There's a place for them. But it just doesn't seem to be what God's led me to do. When I studied theology, I was intrigued by the concept of sanctification. And Peter Scazzaro wrote a book called The Emotionally Healthy Church, and he also wrote another one called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality. And early on in my walk with God, I had fallen in love with the church, but I also struggled with what the point of it was. So, yes, you know, we gather to sing and we learn, but really, why? It didn't change lives in the church that I had grown up in. It was more of a duty. It was just something you had to do to be a good person. But Christianity isn't a duty. It's a relationship and one in which God compels us to grow in community. We don't do it on our own. So Scazzaro's writing echoed the theme in my integration paper in graduate school, where I looked at what made a church healthy. And I posited that it was the health of the leaders modeling emotional and spiritual growth. This was before Scazzaro ever wrote. There was nothing out there. I had to do my own research to write that paper. It was a grueling process. But I posited that it was the health of the leaders modeling emotional and spiritual growth. So it wasn't just the spiritual stuff. It was emotional as well. And I had been so blessed to be led by a pastor. His name was Mark Steele, who had embraced this with his entire being. And it transformed my walk with God and my relationships. So I'm grateful to say that because of what God has done in my life through his word and the power of his Holy Spirit and through the body of Christ, I'm not the same person I was over 30 years ago when I began my journey of faith. I still have a long way to go, but because those themes are so powerful in my own life, they're just reflected in the journeys of my characters as well. And that means I don't shy away from real-life struggles and challenges. I want readers to be able to identify with the characters and be encouraged and affirmed in their own journey. Perhaps my stories will give them hope and the will to press on, because sometimes it can be really hard. Life is messy, and even in the church it can be, since we're all broken by a sinful world. But God can use that in all of us for his glory. So I hope and pray that my stories can illustrate that, along with ultimately the deep love relationship God desires to have with us. That's the ultimate romance, really.
I agree very much with that. I think, especially young people, they tend to view romance in a very unrealistic manner. Mm-hmm. And then when they do get into a relationship and reality slaps them in the face, they become so disillusioned. And I think that's why we have such a high divorce rate, because young people haven't learned how to weather those storms. And what I like about today's Christian fiction, of course, Christian fiction back in the day used to be very, very fluffy. And I know there's a couple of authors I have in mind and I can't think of them right now. The names escape me, but they were very idyllic romance type stories where everything went wonderfully and there may be a bump in the road here and there, but they said a prayer and everything turned out great. And it's not the way it is in real life. And of course, I was able to read your Pestos and Potholes book, and thank you so much for sending me a copy of that.
You're welcome.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. But you brought out so many things, because like you say, people are broken and they come into a relationship broken. And unless they work to help to heal each other, then you're going to have problems. So I very much agree with what you said. Well, speaking of Pestos and Potholes, where did the unusual title come from, Susan?
Oh, the unusual title. It really came, I wanted to illustrate in story form the idea of potholes, and I don't want to give spoilers away in the book if people haven't read it, but you know, I describe where that comes from. And it really did, I actually dedicated the book to the professor that I had in my undergrad where that concept was birthed. And I knew Tony was going to be an Italian chef, and pesto is one of my favorite Italian sauces. So pesto and potholes it was. And People, and I just called it that. It was just kind of a working title, and I'd tell people, and they were like, oh, that is so cool. People reacted so positively to the title. I think because it is such an odd juxtaposition of words, it just had a nice ring to it. People loved it. And so, I mean, they were intrigued without even knowing what it was about. It just intrigued them. So, and I've just kind of continued. I mean, I've got 6 books now in the series, and they all have this food and transportation road kind of a thing going.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah, I mean, Salsa and Speed Bumps, I think you had said it was releasing in January, or in December. It actually is releasing in January now. It got bumped a little bit.
Okay.
I just sent Feta and Freeways, which is number 3 in the series, off to my editor last week. And that's due out hopefully in September of next year. And then the rest are written and contracted, and those are Beer and Roadblocks, Rotwurst and Bridges, and Donuts and Detours is one I just finished recently.
Oh, my goodness.
I've kept up with that theme, and it's been so fun. I don't know, you know, which what's going to be next, which character is going to come out and say, I need to have my story told. But it's kind of fun because they're all based out of Orchard Hill Church. That's their common denominator. And so it's kind of nice that, you know, one person from a story might emerge as the main character for the next one. So it's kind of fun.
Well, I admire your creativity. I think that is just amazing. And I didn't even realize I love Italian food, but I'm ashamed to admit I didn't realize that pesto was a sauce. I kind of got the gist of it. This has got to be some kind of an Italian food.
Yeah, it's a sauce. And it's actually, I've seen it in Mexican restaurants too, so it's not exclusive to Italian, but it is an Italian sauce, and it's one of the favorites my kids like to have too. So you can have it creamy or not. I usually make it creamy. That's the way my kids like it. I just use one of those Norbach little package mixes to make it, so I don't have time to do stuff from scratch like that. I'm too busy writing stories.
There you go. Yeah, and see, I'm not a thick sauce person at all. I like your marinara sauces more.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't care for like fettuccines and that kind of thing that everybody else thinks is so good. So, Susan, your faith plays a major part in your writing. In what ways do your novels reflect your Christian beliefs? Of course, I know this, but I want you to share that with listeners this morning.
Yeah, and I think when you asked this question too, you wanted me to touch on the way I handle sexual tension as well.
Definitely.
So I'll hit that. First of all, I love the question, and I think, you know, because of what I've already told you about sanctification, I think every aspect of who I am as a believer is reflected in my fiction. My main goal is to show real-life faith, not pie-in-the-sky Christianity that is only words and not actions. I wanted to illustrate the process of sanctification, that growth is a rocky road emotionally and spiritually, because so many miss that. And I think the younger generations are screaming for authenticity instead of prescribed rules. Renata, obviously, she has a rule not based on faith, but based on her own past abuse situation. And one of the things I learned as I researched and talked to those who have been sexually abused is that sometimes instead of shying away from sexual intimacy, they have a strong desire for it.
Yes.
Renata was aware of how easy it would be to fall into sexual sin, so she sets a strong boundary line. And I love that Tony, my main character, Antonio, given his past and having his own boundaries violated, respects her choice, even though initially he doesn't understand why. She won't even let him kiss her on the lips.
Right.
But in our culture, sex has become an ugly, shameful thing, and it's been distorted. And most of that's because of the secular culture has just made it such a crass thing. It's not a beautiful thing. But physical intimacy between a married man and a woman is a beautiful thing. And I teach a class on romance at my writers' conferences. And one of the things I share is that the Greek word for lust means strong desire. And they may be refined in character, and lust is evil. It's inconsistent with the word of God. And that's according to Vine's Expository Dictionary. But when I researched the Holman Bible Dictionary, it said that lust in our contemporary usage is a strong craving or desire, especially sexual desire, because we've made it all about sex, and it's not. But in the King James Version of the Bible and other earlier versions, they viewed lust in a more neutral sense of desire. And in some instances, it was even used positively. And I think lust in marriage is desired. We want to lust after our spouse. That's the way we're supposed to be. That's the way God made us. And I think as a writer, I can be honest about the desire without it being shameful. And I think in marriage, that passion can be illustrated without being graphic. I know I met with a group of readers yesterday who had read through Pesto and Potholes, and I asked them about the limo scene at the end of the book, and they just all started laughing. They were like, yeah, go girl, you know. But nothing was on the page, you know. I mean, they knew exactly what happened. They, you know, and they were cheering for Renata because they felt like she deserved that. And, you know, again, trying not to give away spoilers in case somebody hasn't read it, but it's a fun scene. And I said I almost felt scandalous writing it. But there was nothing on there that could lead somebody into temptation. And I think that's the challenge that a romance author, especially in the Christian genre field, walks. You know, we want to, I want to show what that passion is supposed to be like and what God designed it to be, which is beautiful and wonderful. And yes, it creates all kinds of wonderful, delightful feelings in us. But to do that without, and to describe that without leading somebody into temptation. I don't have to be explicit. I don't have to go into every single touch and tingle that they might experience. And I think the reader, I think you get a more, I don't know, I think I read stuff like that and all I do is grin. I just think, oh, yeah, that is so sweet. Because you know what's happening, but you don't have to go there. And you just can appreciate the fact that this is something beautiful and sacred and appreciate how wonderful that is without feeling like you're dirtied by it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. I know exactly what you mean.
I think that, you know, that's the fun challenge, is to reclaim that passion that's a gift from God and give it a strong place in the romance genre. But however, I believe it's also, as an author of fiction, I'm still held as responsible before God for everything I write as any pastor or teacher would. So I need to walk that fine line, and I need to be very careful. One of my pastors who I've worked with for, 15 years now, he reads all my books. So if he can read it and love them.
If he can read it and enjoy it, sure.
Yeah, actually I've been finding that men are loving Pesto and Potholes. You know, it was not an audience I anticipated, but men have picked it up and read it and just loved it and can't stop raving about it. So I think because Tony's a strong character, and he's not some wimpy guy. He sets a good model for what, you know, man should really be. Even
not
though he's human and has failings, too.
That's just what I was going to say. Of course, I did read the book, and I really enjoyed it. And you also made Tony a very real character. You made his flaws apparent. As, believe it or not, guys, all men have one.
Or two, just like women do. I mean, Renata had hers as well. So
exactly. I wanted to interject here, Susan. I want to bring up something that my dad said. Of course, my dad has long been passed away, but this is something that he said many, many years ago along the same vein of what you're talking about. I'm sure you have seen Gone with the Wind. And he said that scene where Rhett Butler sweeps Scarlett O'Hara into his arms and carries her up those stairs is one of the sexiest scenes ever, because after that, the camera shows you nothing, but you in your imagination know just what goes on. So he always said that was one of the best scenes on along that line that was ever filmed. And he's probably right in that. Susan, we're going to take a short break here for what I kind of call station identification. It's the nature of Blog Talk Radio for folks to kind of come in and out. And if we do have somebody who came onto the show just now, they may wonder who they're listening to. So for any listeners who may have joined us in the last few minutes, you are listening to Step Into the Light with Patty Sheen right here on Blog Talk Radio. Our special guest today is Susan Baganz. Susan is an author. She is also an acquisitions editor with Prism Book Group, and she also has a speaking ministry. I'd like to tell you where you can find Susan online. Her website is www.susanbaganz. Let me spell that for you. SusanBaganz.com. She's also on Facebook. Type in Susan M, as in mother, Baganz, author, you also have the author behind your page, don't you there, Susan, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe.
For
well,
Facebook,
actually, no,
yeah.
I think it is just Susan M. Bagan, but it will say author on there.
Okay, there you go.
For the fan page.
Right. And your Twitter is at Susan Bagans. And also for listeners, I know you probably don't have a pen and paper handy for this information. So on my website, which is Patty Sheen, PattiSheene.com, you will find a Blog Talk Radio tab there. And below that tab is a page called Website and Social Media Information. I put all of the information about all of my guests on there so that listeners can refer back to that if they would like to find a guest that we had on the show. And excuse me, they can't recall the website or the Twitter feed or whatever. It's all available right there. May take me a little time. I usually try to have it up within a couple of hours. That doesn't always happen, but by tomorrow, anything you need to know about Susan as far as her contact information will be available. So once again, you're listening to Step Into the Light with Patty Sheen, and our guest is Susan Bagans. We've been talking about her romance writing and her specifically her book Pesto and Potholes. And excuse me, I need to ask you, Susan, before I forget, when you get to your website, I believe it says Silly Goose.
Yes.
What is the meaning behind that?
Well, Silly Goose is really just a term of endearment, and it came across years and years and years ago. I wanted to get a personalized license plate for my car, and you have three options to write down. Silly Goose was one of them, but it was S-I-L-Y-G-O-S because you can only have seven letters. and I had that for a long time, and then I got my email account, my first email. You know, does this date me now? So I just did Silly Goose at, you know, whatever it was at the time. And I still have Silly Goose as part of my personal email. I haven't gotten rid of it. And most people are like, they look at it and they like, I said, did it make you smile? And they're like, well, yeah, you know, when they realize what it says. And so when I got to having a blog, I just called it the Silly Goose Blog. You know, I didn't know what else to call it. It was just one of those things. And I'm not even all that silly, or at least not intentionally. But, you know, and then I don't even have that license plate anymore. We gave it up because I had quit working outside the home and to become a stay-at-home mom. So we were trying to cut expenses because obviously when you lose an income, there's, you know, costs involved in that. And so I did try to argue with my husband, though, to keep it. Because I said, you know, Scripture says I have to have it. And he's like, well, what do you mean by that? And I said, well, Ecclesiastes says vanity of vanity, all is vanity. See, I'm supposed to have a license plate. He didn't buy the theology of that one. So I don't have a Silly Goose plate anymore, but, you know, I'm still Silly Goose. It just, you know, even when my kids and I go geocaching, we're Silly Goose on the geocache site. We're the Silly Goose team, and it's just kind of become our thing.
Cool. Oh, goodness. That was fun, Susan. But on a little more serious note, every writer experiences a dark time of doubt, of discouragement, of rejection of their writing. What was the darkest time in your writing career? And this can be, it doesn't even have to be in your writing career, in your career in general, because you've had more than one.
Yeah, I think just in general, I mean, the darkest times for me, I struggle with major depressive disorder, and I have for years, I think probably my whole life, but it wasn't always diagnosed or treated. And that was compounded by some chronic health issues. I ended up with Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is an autoimmune disease of the thyroid.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And thank God I'm in remission now. It was a long journey to get there, but I am in remission for that now. But I still struggle with the depression. I mean, it's probably going to be with me all my life, and I've come to reconcile myself to that. But I have also, as a writer, I've had days of jealousy. You know, you see other authors getting all kinds of accolades, and it's hard to, you know, especially when you're starting out, to just feel like I'm never, ever going to get there. Rejections were initially very hard until I had one that I should look up her name and send her a note and let her know, but she sent me a page-long list of what I could do to grow as a writer. It was,
wow.
You know, I mean, that was the biggest gift a rejection could ever give me. And because of that, I actually try to do that when I reject as well. I hate doing rejections. That's the worst part of being an editor, acquisitions editor. But it really helped me, spur me to grow, and I've just been so blessed. But the reality is, you know, dark moments come in life, and our struggles are usually momentary. But when we're in them, especially with depression, you don't know when it's going to come. It hits you out of the blue. You don't know when it's going to go away. And it's really hard to see that there's going to be a bright light in the future for that. So having authors who've prayed for me and mentored me along the way has been incredibly helpful. My pastors, like I've already mentioned, they've been a blessing, an encouragement, and a support, you know. And so I think, and I've asked for prayer from them, too, at times when I've written, just because we do have an enemy. And the truth that I want to put in my scripture or in my fiction, it's not my scripture, it's his, but in the fiction, you know, there's truth that our enemy doesn't want people to see or hear. And, you know, the hope is that there would be affirmation on the journey for others, because I've needed that. I've needed that hope. I've needed that kind of a thing. And I have family that, you know, doesn't really support my writing. They think it's just kind of a nice little hobby that Susan's off doing on the side. I should go out and get a real job kind of a thing. You know, so that's really hard. So, and interestingly enough, in spite of the silly goose moniker for my blog, the most traffic I get is when I write about depression, and I don't write about it very often, but I think that's probably why, too, I don't shy away from those darker emotions in my fiction either, because I can relate to that so very well.
Sure.
So that's not a specific instance necessarily, because depression is, it can be such an overwhelming thing that just comes and goes in life, and I think that's probably the biggest battle that I've struggled with. As a writer, but even just as a follower of Christ.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about there, Susan, because I experienced a time of depression in my life, and it's just so dark and so hard to even express to other people what you're dealing with. Well, on the flip side, share a favorite inspirational quote or a verse of scripture that has helped guide you from darkness back to light, and I'm sure there are probably many.
Yeah, I think my favorite, and I was so glad you asked this question. I have this, you know, there's a little spot on Facebook where you can put stuff and nobody finds it anymore because it's all hidden. But there's this quote by Charles Spurgeon, and it always just rings so true for me. He says, "When your faith endures many conflicts and your spirits sink low, do not condemn yourself. There is a reason for your season of heaviness. Great soldiers are not made without war. Skillful sailors are not trained on the shore. It appears that if you are to become a great believer, you will be greatly tested. If you are to be a great helper to others, you must pass through their trials. The uncut diamond has little brilliance, the unthreshed corn feeds no one, and the untried believer is of little use or beauty. There are great benefits to come from your trials and depression." And I find such great hope in that.
Oh, I guess. Wow. That is very powerful.
It's not without some benefit. God is at work, even when I can't see it, even when, I think John Piper says that, you know, God is doing, you know, 5,000 things behind the scenes that you have no idea of.
Mm-hmm.
And we lose sight of the fact that he is so much bigger than our little world. And to trust that is hard at those times when you're buried in darkness. But that quote just gives me hope that, you know, there's a reason, and I have an enemy, and that's going to come into that too. The depression is chemical, yes, but there's a spiritual enemy that will influence that as well.
That's just excellent. I'm going to have to go to your page and check that out now.
Yeah.
You said it's on there.
But you also asked about scripture, and I love James 1. I always come back to this. It's actually not my most favorite verse, but it's probably the most compelling. And just in verse 2, he says, "Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, and let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." And then in verse 12, he says, "Blessed is the man who perseveres under trial, for once he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him." But this is the kicker in verse 17. And this is, I actually write James 1:17 when I sign my books to encourage people to look it up. "Every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, in whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. And I don't think it's an accident that after talk of trials and endurance, God wraps it up as a gift.
Yes.
The gift in the midst of it all is Christ, but it's also to a large degree the people who walk that journey with us. And I struggle when I'm in that pit of despair, if I quote the Princess Bride. but the reality is God is doing something wonderful in us through those difficulties to make us into something beautiful that will be a gift to those around us. And we minister always not always from our strengths, you know. Sorry, Marcus Buckingham, who talks about ministering from our strengths and serving from our strengths. I think sometimes we minister more from our deepest pain. And at least that's what I've found to be true in my life.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. Susan, we spent quite a bit of the first part of the show talking about your writing career, but you also participate in a very active speaking ministry. Share with us some of the subjects that you address with your audiences.
Well, most of my speaking recently has been to writers. And my spiritual gift, one of my primary spiritual gifts is encouragement. And so I love being able to encourage writers.
Same here.
And so I just do. I love going to conferences and sitting down one-on-one with them. And I love teaching the classes with them. So some of the classes that I've taught, like my favorite is probably what God taught me while I was having fun. And it's just the lessons I learned by doing that first NaNoWriMo. Because, for instance, that first book that I wrote in NaNoWriMo, during that I had been praying for a friend for 25 years. And I reconnected with her by doing NaNoWriMo in 2009. And as a result of that, we developed a relationship and God got a hold of her heart. I didn't bring her to Christ. He did. And she started going to church. She started, she attended a theology class I taught for 18 months because she wanted to be mentored by me, of all people. Scary thought. She's become one of my first readers of a lot of my books. She's become an accountability partner. I mean, God got a hold of her, and I just think, and she says, she did NaNoWriMo. That's the only time she's ever done that. She said, I think the only reason I did NaNoWriMo was because God needed me to reconnect with you to bring me back to him. And I just think, you know, and I try to tell people when I go to conferences, yes, you know, we all want to be published. It's the dream of every author to have their work out there to be published. And of course, it'd be even more of a dream if it sold, you know, and hit the next bestseller lists and all that kind of stuff, which is such a fragile thing anyway. But I said, but my friend, her name is Carol, her name is published in the Lamb's Book of Life. And that's more important than any publishing credit that I could ever have. And I get to be a part of that. And it definitely keeps my writing in perspective. When I remember what's really important. And again, it comes back to that relationship. And so even when I'm teaching classes and stuff like that, I think sometimes the more compelling moments are when we're one-on-one. Part of that's probably just my temperament. I thrive more on that one-on-one kind of communication, but I love speaking. So what God taught me while I was having fun, I've also taught that one to like MOPS groups, Mother of Preschoolers groups, to encourage mothers to, even in that busy, 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 crazy, chaotic season of life, because I've been there. I used to actually lead a MOPS group here at our church, to not let that keep you from pursuing what God might have you doing. You know, just even when you think it's just fun, he's got bigger plans for it. I've also mentioned that I spoke on inspirational romance. I do the class, The Heartbeat of Inspirational Romance. I do one called Writing Our History into Our Fiction, where I give specific examples from Pesto and Potholes. About my own history, scary thought, because there's probably more of me in that book than there is anything else I've written. And hopefully soon I'll be using salsa and speed bumps as part of my textbook. I've also done social media for Scaredy Cats, because sometimes authors are afraid to get engaged in social media. I teach on panster versus plotter. I'm a panster when I write fiction, but I'm a plotter when I write my nonfiction, including my messages for classes.
That makes sense, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I also do The Heart of the Writer. I got to do this one in July, and it was, or August. I can't remember, at the end of July, August, in Philadelphia. And that was just more, that one's for any artist, I think. It's just the idea of how do we protect our heart, and how do we stay engaged with God, especially in such an isolating career field, because it is. I mean, what do? We spend all our time at our computer and maybe on Facebook, but that's not the same as having relationships where you're held accountable. And as you've read Pesto and Potholes, you could see accountability was a huge theme in there. Tony was involved in an accountability group of men that, you know, and I was talking to the gals yesterday when I met with them to talk about the book, and I said, just think of it. He would not have won Renata without those guys.
That's
if
right.
He had not
I
been
love
in that,
that you
relationship,
put that in there.
He would have never been able to close the deal, as it were,
mm-hmm.
without them nudging him, challenging him, praying for him. And I think that in our culture, the idea of accountability is something that's so foreign. So I hit that kind of hard in that class, the heart of the writer, just to say, you know, we need to force ourselves into those relationships, and we have to make them happen. It's too easy to let sin slide in. And I know that firsthand. I mean, it's easy for me to do that, too, to let sinful thoughts and patterns creep up. And if I'm not in a relationship where somebody can hold me accountable, it's really easy. And those things can take over and have huge, very, very negative ramifications. And if we're not obeying God in our private life, how can we expect Him to bless us in our fiction? So obviously, I love talking to writers. I love encouraging writers. I need to schedule more of just talking to, you know, people that aren't writers.
Yeah.
Because I do think I have things to offer them, too, with some of the themes that are in my books. You know, just to encourage them, especially with the idea of accountability, but also following your passion. And does it mean that they have to give up their job to, you know, play guitar or to write a book or, you know, to draw. But it's just, you know, do you have a passion to let God use that for His glory and to not be afraid of that? So that's kind of where my heart is when I speak. I just want to encourage people. I want to challenge them to just be walking with God and take that seriously and obey Him. I think I need some of that too for myself. I think when I do the heart of the artist or the heart of the writer talk, it's also speaking to me. I need that reminder to stay on. And I use an example from The Lord of the Rings with Frodo and Samwise Gamgee, too, in my talk, just the idea, who's your Sam? You know, Frodo couldn't have made it to the end of that movie and gotten the ring destroyed in Mordor if Sam hadn't been there. But I think that's true, that we can't accomplish the plans that God has for us on our own. We need other people who are going to walk alongside us through that. So I think I've kind of said that several times here already.
Well, that's all right. You're reiterating a very important point. I wanted to add, too, Susan, I had this thought in my head and it went away, but it came back. One of the other things that I really enjoyed about your book, without giving too much away, is the family dynamics with Tony and his family and the way that Renata brought that to his attention.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was great. And I don't want to give too much away. I don't know how much you want to say, but
it was interesting.
I thought that was
I don't want to give any spoilers, but I know that, like I said, I met with a group who had read the book yesterday, and they also, you know, it was one of those things that was such a subtle thing with his family compared to Renata's family, which is very, very highly visibly dysfunctional. And it was interesting that, you know, some people could relate very, very closely to Renata's family, and other people really did pick up on. And they were waiting for Renata to pick up on stuff with Tony's family because initially they seem so ideal. It's like, I want that kind of family, you know, where people see, have your back and just that there's this fine line that we walk. And for Renata to pick up on that, given her background, was actually kind of surprising. I never know what's coming when I write these books. So when Renata sat down to talk to Tony and she laid this out for him, I had no idea that was coming. It was news to me. And so I was very impressed with her.
Yeah. Good job, girl. That's what makes it
good job.
Fun.
I mean, it really showed some tremendous growth on her part in her journey.
Yeah, there were so many things about that book. I could talk about that all day. However, our time is slipping away really fast.
I can't believe how
fast the time goes, and I'm not going to have time for all the questions I had. But I would like to touch on the fact, Susan, that you are an acquisitions editor.
Yep.
And I don't know how many of our listeners are even writers, but I know if I was a writer and I'd logged onto a show to listen to an acquisitions editor and nothing was said about it, I'd be pretty annoyed. So one of the questions I'd like to ask you, and we need to summarize this fairly quick, what exactly does your job entail? I know that, but listeners may not. So I was an acquisitions editor for a while, in case you didn't know that, Susan.
Oh, I didn't know that. Very cool. I think, you know, initially I thought when I saw the position, when it was posted, I thought, oh, editor, that means I have to edit. Yeah. I didn't know anything about that. Yuck. Who wants to do that? And it was the acquisitions part that you know, everybody encouraged me. Susan, you have the personality. This is who you are. This is great. You go to I go to conferences and I meet with authors. I do speak at those conferences as well, which you've already heard. I already love doing that. I get to read great books. I mean, people can send me. They can't send it to me just on a whim. They have to send it because I ask for it. But I get to look for great books, and I get to encourage authors. And if I really, really love a book, then I can offer the contract for it. And then once I get that contract signed and that author agrees to come on board with Prism Book Group, which is a fabulous family of authors, it's a very, very supportive group of authors. It's very cool. Then I'm their editor. I do the content edit. I do the initial, I don't know, sometimes it's two, sometimes it's four rounds of edits, depending on how much work needs to be done on the book. And then it gets off to a copy editor and then a proofreader and all kinds of stuff. But so I'm the first line of edits that the author gets to go through. So I have to really love that story because I'm going to be reading it over and over and over again.
Right.
But it is fun to, I don't know, there's something really exciting when I get to make an author's dream come true and I send that contract. It's also fun when that release day comes to see that book, go live on Amazon or, Barnes
yes.
and Noble and to be able to say, hey, congratulations, you did it, kind of a thing. So it's fun to be a part of their journeys, too, and encouraging them on their path.
Well, it's an experience I hope to have on the flip side someday to see a book
yeah.
of mine out there. But, man, I'm still working on it. Susan, how did your perspective, and you may have covered this to a degree already, how did your perspective on writing change when you became an editor of other people's work? And what I mean by that, I have a very hard time reading sometimes because I have become very critical.
Yeah, First of all, editing has improved my own writing. So that I can say
yes.
without qualification. I can still sometimes read someone's story without being too nitpicky, but if there's glaring faults, then I stop. And as an acquisitions editor, I can't read everybody's story to the end if it's not going to be good enough to hold me after, like, the first chapter or two. If I see a lot of glaring issues, then it's just done.
Did you hear that, writers?
Like, yeah, capture me right away.
Exactly.
And they'll hear that at any conference they go to. That's kind of a mantra that you got to grab. You got to grab the reader. You got to grab that acquisitions editor, too. But the downside is I have become more critical sometimes of published work. I used to do reviews for, some publishing houses. They send me the free book, and I have to write a review and post it, do the blog, do the whole thing. And I have to do that review whether I like the book or not. And
yes.
And so now I've come to a point where I'm kind of not doing that anymore, and I'll do reviews, but typically only on books that I've just picked up and read and loved on their own because I want to, because I find it so hard to write a critique of another author who's been published. And it's not that their writing is bad. It might be the book was too tediously long and detailed, or, it just wasn't what I expected it to be. And so I hate having to do that, and I only write a really negative review if it's a really glaring issue. I know I did one once. It wasn't a Christian author, but it was a historical, and they had stuff so wrong, and it was stuff that was easily researched. And so it just totally irritated me.
If
they would have gotten it wrong once, I would have been fine, but it ended up becoming a plot theme. And I'm like, no, you can't do this. If they had built it as a fantasy, they could have gotten away with it, but it wasn't. It was set in a certain time period, and they even labeled it in the title, and I'm just like, this is crap. But I hate that.
Yeah,
I don't
exactly.
like to be mean. I don't like to be mean. I know how hard it is to get a book published, although nowadays you can self-publish pretty easily. But I just really don't like to be mean unless I absolutely have to. Reviews are there for a reason. So if it's something glaring that I think a reader needs to see, then I will put it out there. So that's the downside, is that sometimes I can overlook things. I mean, I can still overlook a lot of things as I read because I'm not so concerned. Personally, I don't care about commas as much as other people do. So there's going to be a lot of copy editors out there that are going to be screaming heresy at me. But I'm more interested in the content. I want to know the story. I want to connect with those characters. And if I can't, then it's disappointing.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yep, I'm right there with you, Susan, because I've read some books that, especially if somebody, a dear friend, gives me a book.
Oh, yeah.
And says, read my book and be sure to put a review on Amazon. You're like, do I have to? After you've read the book, because you don't know what to say that's positive.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's very,
uh-huh.
very difficult. Well, with GR, time is counting down way too fast. We're down to 4 minutes here. So I'm going to ask you this last question. If you were asked to describe the perfect book that you would love to see cross your editor's desk, what elements would it contain to meet that criteria?
Well, obviously it should be well written. That should go without saying. But I think the perfect book would make me smile. I think one of the hardest things to write
there is no
humor.
Such thing, but
yes. I think one of the hardest things to write is humor. And I'll just give a little shout out to Janice Thompson. I know she's not listening today. She's got other stuff going on. But her Wedding by Bella series, I think, is just like one of the top-notch comedy, Christian comedy, especially novels out there. She's got a series of them. And I can't read them at the Y because I just start laughing. So I highly recommend them. But I've been able to publish a few authors who have some humor in their writing, Daisy Jericho and Brooke Williams. They don't write with a faith line to them, but they've made me laugh. And so I think great wit in a story is something that's kind of rare. And I wish I could write with it. I don't think I have quite that wit, although sometimes I think that comes out here and there. But I just, witting writing in movies and in books and even in music always attracts me. And I just wish there was more of that in the field of Christian fiction. So that would be the perfect book, one that would make me smile and even make me laugh.
Well, thank you. We had a guest on my other show back when I was doing Literally Speaking who spoke about humor. And one of the things we talked about is the fact that humor puts your guard down.
Yeah.
And once you get into that humorous frame of mind, you are more able to accept some of the tougher subjects and messages that come through in a book. So we talked about that, and I think that's very, very true. Well, Susan, I cannot thank you enough for being on the show. It's been wonderful to have you here. I'm sorry the time flies so fast.
We need 2 hours for all the questions you gave me.
You know, I've often thought about that, but I don't know if we had 2 hours and they'd say, we need three. But anyway, thoroughly enjoyed interviewing and talking with you today, and I certainly hope that we have lots of listeners that are able to tune in. And like I say, the show is not the show is archived, and the same URL that I have on my website is the same URL that you can use to listen to the show. If you caught only a few minutes of it and you're thinking, gee, I really would like to have listened to all of that show, let me again remind folks where they can find Susan. She can be found at Susan Bagans, SusanBaganz.com. There you will find Silly Goose. Her Facebook page is Susan M. Bagans, and her Twitter feed is at Susan Bagans. You can find me at Patty Sheen, PattySheene.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Patty Sheen, and you can find me on Facebook. I encourage you to please come and like my Step Into the Light Facebook page. Okay, Susan, I'm going to say goodbye to you. Thank you again so very much.
Thank you
have
so much for having me.
Have a blessed day.
You Bye. Too. Bye.
Listeners, next week we have a gentleman by the name of Terry Brennan. Terry is an award-winning journalist who has also turned to novel writing and is the author of the Jerusalem Prophecies series, which is an action-packed and suspenseful trilogy rich with ancient history and international intrigue. Terry also serves homeless people in New York City. His books are fantastic. I just finished his second one. His third one comes out today. In closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. Thank you for listening. Hope to have you back here next week, Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. Mountain. It'll be Mountain Standard Time by then. Don't forget to set your clocks back Saturday night for the time change on Sunday morning. God bless you all.